I call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division to order. A quorum is present. Representative Lee, do you move approval of the March 28th minutes?
Mr. Chair, I move approval of the March 28th minutes.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The minutes are approved. Members, we're going to go through the delete all amendments, and I'm going to go to the chair and we'll describe some of these. Vice Chair Claflin will take the gavel.
Jansen, if you'd like to introduce the amendments.
I will move the House File 2209 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Members, we had a technical drafting error on the DE2 amendment where the appropriation language for the Explore Minnesota Tourism was inadvertently left out of the DE2 amendment. It was included in and on the spreadsheet. So procedurally, we need to do a couple things to get this proper. I'm going to incorporate the A1 amendment into the DE2 amendment, and we'll move the DE2 amendment with the technical A1 amendment incorporated to get the bill into the shape which would be the DE3 amendment, which then we can work off the DE3 amendment if we could do that. So any
discussion? Any questions on what we're doing? Would you like to renew your motion? Or all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And before the committee, now we can use the DE3 amendment text. Representative Davian.
Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Chair Hansen, when you go through the bill, will you reference the House file numbers that each portion of the bill refers to or refers back to? And I may have to phone a friend once in a while.
Madam Chair and Representative Fabian, so we're going to have Mr. Hagemeyer and Ms. Taylor go through the bill. I will have to get back to you this evening with the numbers on the DE3 amendment that we can provide for you. And maybe we can make an amendment, but maybe we can make another copy with them written in. That might be the easiest way to do it.
Representative Fabian?
The forestry people would like that, yes.
Right, Chair Hansen, if you'd like to present the bill.
So members of the committee and members in the audience and the people watching at home, the 2209 DE3 amendment is the omnibus finance bill for environment and natural resources. It includes the appropriations and some policy for those agencies. I think in summarizing this bill, it's a bill that looks at problem solving. For long-term pollution problems, you'll see a number of solid waste initiatives. You will see a couple of small business initiatives there for problem solving from long-term problems. We have some pollinator initiatives in there, and we have initiatives for dealing with the problem of chronic wasting disease. As we go through the bill and consider it over the next few days, I'd ask you to think of it in the light of problem solving for some of these long-term persistent problems that we've had in the state of Minnesota, and we have creative solutions to try to deal with those. We incorporate a number of members' bills, and Representative Fabian, I'll try to get those numbers for you, but it is a comprehensive and diverse bill that is in front of you. And with that, I would have, and I, Before we start, I just want to thank all of the staff that work for the people of Minnesota here, Mr. Hagemeyer and Ms. Taylor, particularly for their diligence and effort on working on this, but also all of the committee staff and the pages that make this place run well. I'd like to thank them for their work.
Mr. Hagemeyer and Ms. Taylor, if you'd like to present yourself.
Madam Chair, I'll start by going through the spreadsheet, if everyone has that in front of them. It's the spreadsheet looking like this. On the bottom right corner, it's April 1st, 2019, timestamp 7:32 p.m. Reading the spreadsheet from left to right, you'll see the agency's change items on the left, the funding source, those abbreviations like GEN is general fund, ENV is environmental fund, REM is remediation fund. I can explain some more as we go through. The first boxed columns across are the base amounts for 20 and 21, the biennial total, and then 22 and 23, again, a biennial total. The next part you'll see listed as governor's revised. That was the governor's biennial budget recommendation for fiscal years 20 and 21, and then governor's revised fiscal years 22 and 23. That would be what we call the tails. And then in the middle, about two-thirds of the way across the page, you'll see House File 2209DE2 on top of it. That would be the budget recommendations included in this bill. And that's what I'll be going through as we go down the sheet. If you look on lines 2 through line 6, it is the general fund totals for this bill. You can see we had the direct appropriation of $300,825,000. There's some open appropriations included in the bill, which are they have an open appropriation for them, so they're not directly included in this bill, but we do count them towards our target, and then there's also a transfer that happens. For total spending of $357,287,000 from the general fund, which is $33,058,000 above the base. Our target was $32,558,000. And you'll see on line 9 there's a cancellation of legal costs in 2019 of $500,000. They get reappropriated in this bill. So our net target is $32,558,000. The rest of the lines through line 44 are just the totals for each of the different funding sources. So in total, direct appropriations of this bill on line 21, there's $952,523,000 being directly appropriated, and that's a total of $79,057,000 above base. The total for all the agencies, if you look at line 43, including the open and statutory appropriations, is $1,757,050,000. But those that are statutory and open are not directly changed in this bill. Line 45 starts the Pollution Control Agency. On line 46, you will see that the total for the Pollution Control Agency is $1,282,000 above base from the general fund, a little over $4 million from the environmental fund. There's some remediation fund of $1.2 million, and the CLIF has a reappropriation of a former appropriation that's canceled. Total new funding for PCA was $8,257,000. If you go to the second page of the spreadsheet, I can start going through the change items in PCA specifically. Starting on line 67 are the general fund changes in the Pollution Control Agency. The first one, you'll see some bracketed numbers. That's a transfer from DNR, but it's for legal costs related to water loss or legal costs related to different water issues the state has. Line 68, the governor had recommended $1.5 million for food waste reduction. That is not included in this bill. I'll just point out the things that the governor had recommended that are not included. Line 69, there's the EIS for the karst groundwater contaminants. That was not included in this bill. There's line 70 has climate outreach and engagement. It's a $250,000 one-time appropriation from the general fund. That is included in this bill. Line 71, the governor had recommended $1.5 million from the general fund for electric vehicle infrastructure. That is not included in this bill. Line 72, you'll see there's $350,000 one-time appropriation from the general fund for a managed aquifer recharge study. Line 73, we had heard a bill earlier to establish a state D. It did have a fiscal note to it. The language is included in this bill, but it shows an absorbed cost, so we aren't directly appropriating money for that. Line 74, there's the flame retardant chemical use prohibited. We had heard this bill earlier in committee at a fiscal note. This appropriates slightly less than the fiscal note recommended, but it's $141,000 per year ongoing. Line 75, there's some $250,000 one time from the general fund for enhanced lead and asthma activities. Line 76, there's a $150,000 appropriation for feedlot training, curriculum, and development. And that is it for the general fund. Line 78, we start the environmental fund. You'll see there's an air appropriation increase. This was included in the governor's budget and is also included in this bill. Line 79, you'll see the extension of the PFA assistance appropriation. The governor's bill just showed a carry forward of the money, but in order to comply with budget rules, we cancel it and reappropriate it. It's canceled in fiscal 19, reappropriated in fiscal 20. Line 80, you'll see the agency and governor, or the governor had a recommendation for streamlined water policy permitting. It had fee revenue coming in and expenditures going out. That is not included in this bill. Line 81, the governor had a recommendation of $800,000 per year for business-friendly data services. The House includes this, but it starts it in the second year. It helps maintain a better balance in the environmental fund going forward. Line 82 is the St. Louis River Area of Concern. There's a new appropriation of from the Environmental Fund of $484,000 the first year and $363,000 the out years. This is a program that started, I think, 3 years ago, and we had 3 years worth of appropriation. This kind of continues and extends that program going forward. Line 83, there's a recycling market development out of the Environmental Fund. This was the governor's recommendation of $400,000 per year. And again, this is one we just started in the second year in order to help maintain a better balance in the environmental fund. Line 84, there's understanding reducing community health risks from TCE. This is a change item that came in the governor's revised budget. It's $393,000 for the 2 years of this biennium as a one-time appropriation for those 2 years. Line 85, you'll see waste tire facility changes. This is a bill we heard a couple weeks ago or a week ago. It appropriates $30,000 to the PCA per year for the work related to that. Line 86, you'll see the salt applicator training. This is a bill we had heard in committee as well. This appropriates the money for that program, but there is also fee revenue. You'll see later on, I think it's $105,000 per year, so it offsets some of the cost of the program. That is it for the environmental fund. Under line 88, you'll see our vapor intrusion and contaminants of emerging concern. This was the governor's recommendation. It's and it is included in this bill. Line 89, it's an appropriation from the closed landfill investment fund from 2 years ago. The agency or the governor had recommended carrying this forward. We cancel it and reappropriate it to comply with budget rules. Line 91, we have the railroad and pipeline safety reinstatement. This is a special revenue fund. It's a statutory appropriation, but we do include that in this budget that the governor recommended. Line 92, there's electric vehicle infrastructure. This was, again, special revenue and statutorily appropriated, but the House, we didn't include any language in this bill for that. Line 93, you'll see the carpet product stewardship, the bill we had heard previously. Again, that special revenue, and it's statutorily appropriated. We do have the language for this, so that would be $121,000 per year starting in the second year for that program, but it's collected as a fee. And that is it for the Pollution Control Agency. Line 96 starts a DNR. On line 97, you'll see the direct appropriations from the general fund are $190,036,000. If you look at the change column next to it, it'll clearly have an error in there, but it's not a $190 million change. I corrected that already. I'll post a different spreadsheet later. And you see that in the tails as well. The actual change was $19,263,000 from the general fund above base. On line 108, you'll see the total from all the funds directly appropriated is $57,627,000 above base. If we flip to page 3 of the spreadsheet, you can start seeing the change items. Lines 127 through 147 are the governor's recommendation for an operating increase for the agency. This is all the different funds and accounts that that comes out of in the various amounts. In the bill, it gets broken up to different divisions, and some of them have riders that increase as well, but this is kind of the short version of it. It lumped into one piece, but it is the governor's recommendation of the operating increase. Line 150, you'll see the Pineland Sands EIS the governor had recommended is not included in this bill. The DNR had a protecting our public waters change item recommended by the governor of $800,000 per year from the general fund. It also includes some fee revenue and expenditure out of the Natural Resources Fund. The general fund is funded at $400,000 per year in here, and we do include the Natural Resource Fund appropriations as well. Line 153, you'll see the sustaining Minnesota's whitetail deer. It's a direct appropriation from the general fund of $2.41 million first year and $2.160 the second year. This was the governor's recommendation. In the bill, you'll see there's some language of some carve-outs for specific projects within that. Line 154, you'll see the legal costs. The governor had recommended just over $6 million. This bill includes $3.5 million of legal costs. On 155, you'll see the governor had recommended protecting DNR applications at $2.8 million the first biennium and $1.7 ongoing. This has $1.7 the first biennium and the second biennium. Line 156, you'll see the Office of School Trust Land Director. The governor had recommended changing this to DNR. Basically everything stays the same. It was held in admin, so the state government finance bill sees a savings of $187,000. This transfers it to DNR, so we have the cost in this bill, basically, in the savings in the state government bill. Lines 157, you'll see a forest carbon sequestration goal. This is from the general fund, and this would be for grants to cities, I believe. 158, you'll see, and there's another piece of that out of the forest management investment account for DNR. Line 158, you'll see grants for cities for the EFB quarantine areas. This would help with removal of infested trees. Line 159, you'll see the No Child Left Inside bill. This has a grant program for 2 years, the first biennium only of $250,000 per year. That was it from the general fund for DNR. Going down on line 162, we start the various accounts within the Natural Resources Fund. The governor had proposed increases for boat licenses. Those are included in this bill at the same amount. Line 163, you'll see boating registration fees. Again, the governor had recommended a invasive species surcharge. I think it was $1.75 for a three-year program, or it was a smaller amount. The House has the $20 provision for the entire license, which is a $15 increase. It's a bill we had heard earlier. So this has the expenditures of $2.2 million per year from for the DNR. The line below it, the bill had specified that $2 goes for grants to lakes associations out of that $20. So $500,000 per year would be for grants. And on line 165, you'll see there's grants for MASERC. This creates a new account called the Invasive Species Research Account, and $4 from each of those fees goes into that account. So $1 million per year is appropriated for that. Line 166, again, is a protecting our public waters. It's out of the water management account, and this is based off the fee revenue from some of the increases that the governor had recommended. Line 167, the governor had recommended $1 million per year out of the forest management investment account for just forest management at DNR. That's included here. Line 168, again, is that forest carbon sequestration goal that I had mentioned. It's $500,000 per year from the forest management investment account for more tree planting, I believe. Line 169, the governor had a statutory appropriation out of this natural resources miscellaneous. Balsam Bow account. It expands the use of that for both the pine poles and spruce tops. Birch poles and shrew stops. Line 170, the governor had a transportation funding package increase to the water rec account appropriations. We didn't directly include this, but I'll show it later as a contingent appropriation because we do not have the gas tax included in this bill and the language for the actual gas tax in here. Line 171, you'll see the governor had recommended increases from the ATV and ORV accounts. Out of the ATV account, it was a total of $1.85 million. For the biennium, this has a reduced amount of $850,000 for the biennium. It's split between a few different spots, but this has a reduced amount because you'll see on lines 172, there's a grant for Quad Cities ATV Club Trail of $950,000 for both of the years. There's a grant for Voyager ATV Trail for $600,000, and then there's line 174 has the Prospectors Loop Trail and the Taconite State Trail at $2.4 million. So just in order to keep that account at a fairly decent positive balance, we reduced the ATV appropriation to DNR. And you'll see it as contingent appropriation later in the spreadsheet. Line 175, you'll see there's an increase, or sorry, this one is a decrease to the local trails grants lottery and lieu account. This account is just projected negative, so by reducing the appropriation, we just can show it as positive for the biennium. Line 176, you'll see the appropriation increase, like the ATV one that I talked about earlier, but this is out of the off-road vehicle account. Line 177, you'll see there's increases of $60,000 per year from the zoo lottery and lieu account. So what we're doing here, there's some balance in the account. So each of the three zoos, the Minnesota Zoo, Como Zoo, and Lake Superior Zoo, each receive $30,000 more per year out of that account. Line 178 and 179 are the cross-country ski pass increases. The governor had recommended increasing those fees. That's included in this bill. There's appropriation to DNR, and then there's also statutory spending for grant and aid program for the cross-country ski trails. We have the statutory language to spend out of the special event account, the state trail special event account. Line 181, the governor included the authorizing strategic land sales. That is not included in here. On line 182, you'll see there's language in the bill to rename St. Croix State Park. It's a $50,000 for the costs associated with that. In the bill, it's unintentionally left blank the account source, so it would be general fund. The intent is that it would be state parks account, and we will change that going forward. Line 183 is the Hill Annex Mine State Park. There's a $260,000 appropriation out of the parks account in order to keep that park open and operating going forward for a few years. That is it out of the Natural Resources Fund. Line 185 has the Game and Fish Fund. Starting on 185 is a governor's recommendation for the ice safety program of $176,000 per year. That is included here. Another component of the Sustaining Minnesota Whitetail Deer was some research out of the Game and Fish Fund of $908,000 per year. That is included here, and it does have some revenue coming back from the Pittman Robertson funds that the agency can match for this. Line 187, the last one on that page, is angler surveys to inform fisheries management. That was the governor's recommendation and is included here as well. Line 188, you'll see the Fish and Wildlife dedicated deer license. You'll see that showing up three different times here. Currently, that goes into the all the license fees from this go into the operating account. Small pieces are used for different things, but most of it goes into the operating account. There's language that was in the bill last year as well, but it directs half the revenue into the deer management account. The governor had included this and included a statutory appropriation of the money. The House includes it as a direct appropriation and $7.146 million per year. It nets to zero within the agency, but we just have to show it as the different accounts. Line 191, you'll see the walk-in access program. We have a direct appropriation of $250,000 per year here. In the bill, you'll see there's language to remove the donation and the validation portion of that that people pay into currently. Line 192, you'll see out of the Game and Fish Heritage Enhancement Account grants of $100,000 for both of the years of the biennium for shooting sports facility grants. Line 193, you'll see the non-toxic shot WMA signage. There's language in the bill to limit the use of, or to require the use of non-toxic shot on certain WMAs. This gives $10,000 for some of the signs required at those facilities. Line 194, you'll see trade in prohibited animal parts. This is an appropriation for the agency to do the education outreach work with that bill. And then line 197, you will see the Office of School Trust Lands Director. There's $300,000 from the Permit School Fund. This is a base appropriation we give to the School Trust Lands Director, but again, we're changing it from admin to DNR. And that is it for DNR. Line 199 starts the Minnesota Zoo. You'll see the total appropriations for the zoo from the general fund are $20,013,000, which is $1,647,000 above base. The change items for the zoo start on 209. There's an operating adjustment of $1.1 million for the biennium. The governor had originally requested a guest mobility project, but later removed that in his revised recommendations. Line 211, there's a communication security systems upgrade. It's $499,000 one time. That is included in this bill. Line 212 is a prairie butterfly conservation. It's a bill you heard earlier. I believe it was $80,000 at that point, but we include $40,000 for the work in this bill one time. And again, there's the zoos lottery in lieu that I talked about earlier for $30,000 per year. And that is it for the zoo. On line, sorry, you need this for water. On line 215, we start the Water and Soil Resources Board. You can see the total general fund appropriations are $38,944,000. That is $10,566,000 above base. Line 223, the agency or the board has an operating adjustment of $1.311 million for the biennium. The governor had also recommended critical IT and cybersecurity repairs of $528,000. That is included in this bill. There's a base adjustment for fiscal services of $170,000 per year that the governor recommended. That is included in this bill. The governor had proposed an increase for easement stewardship. That is not included in this bill. There was a buffer credit for agricultural land. There's a general fund appropriation piece to Bowser, but it's tied to the tax credit that he had also recommended, and that is not included in this bill. There's line 228. There's conservation materials containing plastics. There's $150,000 for the work related to that. On line 229, you'll see grants for SWCDs. There's $3.5 million in fiscal 20 and $3.5 million in fiscal 21, but there is not a base going forward from the general fund for these grants. Line 230 is the Conservation Reserve Program state incentives. It's one-time incentive payments for people to enter the Conservation Reserve program. Line 231, there's $637,000 for the Lawns to Legumes grant program. Line 232, there's a one-time $150,000 appropriation for a statewide action plan for soil health. Line 233, there's a $50,000 increase one-time for the Lower Minnesota River dredging sites. That is it for Bowser. Line 236 is the Metropolitan Council. The only change here was adding $600,000 per year out of the lottery in lieu account, just with the balance and revenues that are currently coming in. That's an amount that can be appropriated. Line 243 is the Science Museum. There are no changes made in this bill to the Science Museum. 248 is the Conservation Corps, and there's also no changes being made there. Line 254 is Explore Minnesota Tourism. Explore Minnesota Tourism has general fund appropriations of $28,988,000 in this bill, which includes the one change item made here is establishing the Office of Outdoor Recreation, and appropriates $300,000 for the biennium for this purpose. Line 264, you'll see the administration. This is, again, just changing the school trust plan director appropriations from admin to DNR. And that is it for those direct appropriations. If you go to line 270, you'll see what I have listed as contingent appropriations. Line 271 so starts the gas tax ones. These are based on the governor's recommendations for his transportation funding package. You'll see line 272 is the appropriation of the water rec account for the DNR. It's $3.65 million per year. Line 273 is Forest Roads account. It's a special revenue. It has statutory authority, but that would also be able to happen with the gas tax increase. Line 274 is an appropriation increase from the ATV and ORV accounts. This one is just the ATV account. This is what I mentioned earlier. We had reduced the amount in order to make the account have a better balance, so we'd be able to appropriate that with the gas tax. Line 275, this would be contingent on the solid waste tax increase. Representative Hansen had a bill that was introduced yesterday, House File 2763, that proposed these changes. 276 would be the wood waste salvage for biomass energy. It'd be $3 million per year. 277 be food waste reduction. The governor had recommended this from the general fund, but it had this would be out of the environmental fund contingent upon that increase, $750,000 per year. $400,000 for competitive recycling grant program that's also currently in the bill. as a base amount, and then 279, there'd be an increase to SCORE grants of 2.9 million the first year and 3.5 million ongoing. And there's also language in the bill for a transfer to MLCAT to fully repay the amounts taken in 2003 and 2005 of 13,905. Beyond that, you'll see the revenues and transfers. Under PCA, you'll see we did not include that streamline the water policy and permitting. You see the revenues from the air appropriation increase of $774,000 for the biennium. There's would have been a transfer in from the electric vehicle infrastructure that's not included in here. You'll see on line 291, the carpet product stewardship. Again, this is a revenue of $121,000 per year for that program. Line 292 is the salt applicator training. As I said before, we appropriate money, but this offsets some of the cost at $105,000 of revenue. There's on line 293, you'll see there's a one-time transfer from the remediation fund being transferred out on line 294 to the dry cleaner response and reimbursement account to help pay for some of the backlog of reimbursements under that. Line 295, you'll see the cancellation of the PFA assistance program, which we reappropriate in the bill. And 296 is the same thing for the closed landfill investment fund. Line 298 is the DNR. 299, the land sales, that we do that in a separate bill. It should be zero for the house, but it's included in a separate bill. Line 300 is increasing the boat and registration fees. This is the governor's proposal for the boat fees, same revenue amount. On line, sorry, I believe I have my line missing where I have the invasive species account money should be a higher appropriation based on the $20 revenue. I will fix that going forward. Line 301 is the protecting our public waters, which requires some of those permits to be amounts to be increased. It has the revenue of $716,000. The special forest products we talked about earlier has a $2,000 revenue per year. The invasive species account on line 300 should be a higher amount. I will fix that going forward. On line 303 is the boat fees going into the water rec account, and that is the governor's recommendation for that amount. The ski pass has on 304 has an increase, and that raises about $70,000 in revenue per year. You'll see the Pittman Robertson refund on 305 or reimbursement for some of the work related to the game and fish appropriation earlier. Line 306 and 307 is the transfer amounts for the deer license revenue being going to a different account. Line 308, I show some lost revenue for the turtle license provision modifications. Line 309, there's lost revenue of about $130,000 per year for the walk-in access validation and donations. Line 310, there's language in the bill for full reimbursement of the cost of venison that's being donated for the butchers to process that. Line 311, you have the legal cost cancellation and the reappropriation in the bill. Line 313, there's a creation of the Office of Outdoor Recreation. There's a donation account they can access if they receive donations. I just have a question mark there because we don't know if they would receive any donations or not. And then the last page is just a box showing the amounts that would be received from the transportation funding package based on the governor's amount for the gas tax increase. And that is it for the spreadsheet, Madam Chair.
Even for someone that likes to look at numbers, that's a lot of numbers to take in. Are there any questions from the committee members? Chair Hanson, would you like to make any comments?
If we could maybe move to Ms. Taylor, because I think if she goes through the bill, it'll help describe the appropriations.
Ms. Taylor.
Madam Chair, I'm going to go through the statutory and other language starting on my notes are on the DE2, so if I accidentally say any page numbers, I apologize, but the section numbers should all stay up. But you guys should start on page 44 of the DE3.
We're on DE3 or 2?
You can, three is what we'll be operating on. Okay, so section one is the state B bill. You'll notice that subdivision three is now removed. You'll see some language later on that codifies that in the DNR statute. Otherwise, it says it was laid over. Section two is from Representative Lee's House File 167 that dedicated the 40% of settlements to sort of to allow the community health wards to dictate how that goes. You'll remember from testimony that there's concern on PCA's part about having health be the one working with the community health boards, and that's been incorporated into this new language. Section three is the payback of the MLCAD account that was mentioned through the spreadsheet. Section four is the venison donation reimbursement cap being eliminated. That was mentioned.
Maybe if I could just describe that. That one's a little bit unique. That was heard in the Ag Committee, and Chair Poppy asked that we carry it here because it's a transfer from the DNR to Ag. So the bill was heard in both the House and the Senate and the Ag Committee, and she asked that we carry that here because it's the DNR dollars that go over to Ag.
Thank you, Ms. Harris.
Yeah. Section five is the new Rusty Patch Bumblebee language I mentioned previously. This would just formally designate it as an endangered species and then mention the federal designation as well as include the EQB doing the coordination efforts as the bill had originally had. Section six is from Representative Lee's House File 1403. This is the ivory and other prohibited animal parts language, and this is how it was last seen by the committee. Section seven is from Representative Becker Finn's House File 133, the No Child Left Inside grant program, and the language is as it was last seen by the committee. Section eight is the invasive species surcharge increase. This is from House File 1885. This is where you'll see the $4 dedication to the new research account. And this is as it was last seen by the committee. Section 9 is the renaming of St. Croix State Park to Walter F. Mondale State Park. This is an alternative to a Representative Winkler bill that was heard in policy. Section 10 is from the governor's budget. This is the increase in the cross-country ski pass fees. Section 11 is also from the governor's budget. This appropriates the special use permit revenues. The next several sections, 12 through 17, are also from the governor's budget. These are the watercraft licensing fee increases. And then if you go to section 18, this is the increase of the watercraft surcharge from the bill, Representative Morrison bill, from 5 to 20. Section 19, 20, and 21, this is also from the governor's bill. This is the changes to the decorative material buyer requirements that would include spruce and birch stems now. Section 22. This is from a Representative Lippert bill, House File 1299. This reduces the minimum lot requirement for plantings that the DNR can sell for use on private lands. Section 23 is also from that bill. This establishes the $1 million additional tree planting. Madam Chair,
what was the bill number for Section 22 again?
Ms. Taylor?
Yeah. House File 1299.
Thank you.
Section 24 and 25 were also, these are also from the governor's recommendations on the decorative material buyer requirements expansion. Section 26 and 27 are the first of several sections on the walk-in access program that you heard when we're going through this spreadsheet. These are technical sections needed to remove reference to the donation that's going to be removed later on. Section 28, this is from House File 600 and also from the governor's budget that dedicates the deer license fees to the deer management account. It's slightly different than either the governor's position or the House bill it was laid over, because this has a technical thing, actually establishing the account, and then, as mentioned in the spreadsheet, it does not include a statutory appropriation. Section 29 removes the requirement to have a validation to use the lands that are enrolled in the walk-in access program. Section 30 and 31 are the provisions that remove the provision allowing those to donate into the walk-in access program. Section 32 is the first of several sections from House File 749 that dealt with the turtle seller license and getting rid of those provisions. Section 33 is the non-toxic shot mentioned in the walkthrough. This would require a non-toxic shot to be used when you're taking small game on WMAs in the farmland zone. This is similar to a rule proposed by the DNR a few years ago. Section 34, 35, and 36 are from the turtle licensing bill. Section 37 is the provision on the conservation materials containing plastic. It has been narrowed so that it would only apply to stream bank stabilization projects. Section 38 is from the governor's budget. This is the work permit application fee increases for certain water permits. Section 39 is from House File 2267. This is the carpet stewardship program. There were a number of edits and updates that were made on recommendations by the agency. And then sort of a long section. Skip ahead to Section 40, which is also a section related to the carpet stewardship. Section 41 is from House File 1219. This is the Representative Heintzman bill. It's also similar to language that was in the vetoed bill from last year. This is the would establish some requirements for the Solid Waste Capital Assistance Program. Section 42 is from House File 223. This is the waste tire facility provisions that required some additional financial qualifications. It has been narrowed so it only applies to those that are operating outdoors. And there was also some technical changes to Subdivision 2, Paragraph B on the financial qualifications and what exactly they would need to provide. Section 43 is the first of a few sections. This is getting carried in House File 1728, Representative Fabian's bill. It's also similar to language from last year. It's formally establishing the natural resources damage account in statute. It does exist, so it's more of a technical, and it was in the vetoed bill last year. Section 44 is from Representative Carlson's bill, clarifying that the closed landfill investment fund is appropriated to the PCA. Sections 45, 46, and 47 are provisions that reinstate the MPCA Citizens Board. Section 48, 49, and 50 are additional sections for the Natural Resources Damages Account Establishment. Section 51 is from House File 1502. This is the Voluntary Certification Program for Salt Applicators, and this is the language that was last seen by the committee. Section 52, this is from Representative Daphne's House File 2220, this establishing the Minnesota Outdoor Recreation Office. This is slightly different than what the committee saw. You'll notice that the governor now appoints the director. And then Subdivision 3 establishes the account that was mentioned in the walkthrough. And now there's a strategic planning requirement in Subdivision 4, and they must work with the chairs, certain legislative chairs and others in doing so. And then there's an explicit requirement for them to work with the existing Explore Minnesota Tourism Council. Section 53 is related to the governor's recommendation for the school trust lands director to be going to go through the DNR. This would just formally state that the DNR would provide office space, which I believe the director is currently there anyway. Section 54 is from House File 359 on the flame retardant chemicals and the firefighting cone prohibitions, and this is as the committee last saw it. Section 55 is another provision from the turtle licensing bill. Section 56 is from House File 1720, Representative Becker Finn's bill on the chronic wasting disease adopted dumpster and the deer carcass handling guidelines. There were a few changes. You'll notice that in paragraph B, they now must take into consideration infectious waste definition, and then meat processors were also added by taxidermists, so they would also be included in the guidelines. Section 57 is a provision related to the renaming of St. Croix State Park. It's just a revisor instruction to recodify that. And then the repealers, paragraph A and C are related to the turtle licensing bill, and then paragraph B is some obsolete language related to the MPCA Citizens Board reinstatement. And that takes care of that.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Are there any questions? Chair Hansen?
Madam Chair, an explanation on the walk-in access program. So the walk-in access program validation brought in about $100K a year, and the asking the question at the point of sale brought in, I believe, 22. So 100,000 and 22,000. So we are getting rid of the asking of the question, and we are doing appropriating 250K ongoing. So we're the intent on that was to reduce the hassle and provide the funding, and actually a greater amount of funding for the walk-in access program.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, why not do a combination of both?
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Because I think the 22,000 for asking the question, I think there's a hassle factor there for Minnesotans when they're going through the question, and I'll clearly state that I developed the question thing for venison donation, and then it was swapped, and it provided little money there as well, and then it was swapped to the walk-in access program. I think this provides better long-term support for the walk-in access program.
Are there any other questions?
Madam Chair, there may be testifiers. I think mm-hmm. they may be coming tonight, but if there's anybody who's here who would like to provide comment, I think we have a little bit of time.
Yes, we will be reconvening at 5 p.m. in the basement office, or the basement hearing room in the state office building, but if there's anyone who would like to testify now, you're welcome to come down. Seeing none. We will be in recess until 5 p.m. We will be back in the basement of the state office building.
The Environment and Natural Resources Finance Committee will come back to order. And members, since we last were gathered a few hours ago, Ms. Taylor has put together a summary in your packet of where the bill numbers are, which article cross-referencing with the authors. So if you're interested in that, that's in your packet. And we have a large number of testifiers tonight, so I'd like to get going with that. And the Commissioner of DNR is here. Commissioner Stroman, welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much for having me here this evening.
Proceed.
Mr. Chair, again, my name is Sarah Stroman. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on this bill here this evening. This amendment, the DE amendment here, as it's drafted, includes many of the priorities for the Department of Natural Resources that were included in the governor's budget, and we very much appreciate that fact. What I'd like to do is just go through what those top five budget priorities are, talk about how they're addressed in the bill, and then I have just a few other comments. I know you have a long list of testifiers here this evening, so I will try to be efficient. So as I mentioned, the DNR had five top budget priorities out of the governor's original budget. The first of those was the operating adjustment. This is very important to maintain the current level of service that the DNR currently provides to Minnesotans. This covers this adjustment covers compensation increases over the FY 20 and 21 biennium that are existing in our current contracts. This House bill does fund that at the governor's recommended level at $15.91 million. And so we very much appreciate that. And thank you for your support of maintaining the existing levels of service that Minnesotans have come to expect from the Department of Natural Resources. The second of our priorities related to the boat registration fees and the aquatic invasive species surcharge. The governor's recommendation for boating registrations generates just under $6 million for the biennium, and the House bill does fund those registration increases at the governor's recommended level. We appreciate this as it will support our public water access infrastructure. Specifically, these funds are needed to maintain Minnesota's abundant and high-quality boating infrastructure, our public water accesses, and our state water trails. Specifically, this funds not only the operations of those water accesses throughout the season, raising and lowering of docks, but it will also fund rehabilitation at some accesses that are in desperate need. Water recreation funding also supports boating safety and law enforcement activities by county sheriff, deputy, and DNR conservation officers, including responding to accidents, injuries, and aquatic invasive species violations. The second piece of this item was the governor's recommendation for the aquatic invasive species surcharge. The original proposal in his budget was to increase that surcharge from $5 to $7 and a quarter for that three-year fee, and that amount would generate about $1.3 million for the biennium. In this bill, that fee increases from the amount of $5 to $20 for the three-year fee, and that's allocated between the aquatic invasive species account and a new invasive species research account. We very much appreciate the additional spending for obviously what is a very critical issue for the state of Minnesota aquatic invasive species. With that additional revenue to the DNR, we would use that for additional watercraft inspectors and trainers, as well as for seasonal staff to increase our capacity to respond to urgent issues related to aquatic invasive species. So when there is a new discovery found, we would have better capacity to respond quickly to that, which is something we hear often about from our Lake Association partners. The third priority addressed in the governor's budget, as well as this House budget, is related to chronic wasting disease and research related to management of white-tailed deer. In your bill, it is funded at the governor's recommendation of $4.57 million general fund and $1.1 million annually thereafter. As we've talked about numerous times in the past, this funding really is critical to allow the DNR to respond quickly and aggressively to this very serious threat to Minnesota's white-tailed deer population, as well as to our hunting, deer hunting heritage. To date, our response has been funded with Game and Fish Fund, and so this appropriation out of the general fund is very important to ensure that we are dealing with this public problem broadly with our spending. I do want to note that while at an overall level this is funded at the governor's recommended level, there are a few specific line items in this budget that I would like to address, because those amounts take away from the amount we have to spend on direct response, surveillance, enforcement, and outreach. And while we're supportive of the activities, I think we would suggest differing amounts for some of those. Specifically, $250,000 in the first year is allocated for an Adopt a Dumpster program. And given that CWD right now is in limited locations, we estimate needing about $50,000 for this program. So we would recommend a change allowing the rest to go to our direct response and surveillance activities. Similarly, with the $250,000 in the first year allocated to developing guidelines for the handling and disposing of deer carcasses, we believe that $50,000 is an adequate and reasonable amount for that activity. We already have best management practices that we can review and update. We would not be starting from scratch here, and so we think we can do that work for a lesser amount. And then lastly, there's $500,000 allocated for University of Minnesota research. We absolutely support that work and that research. We have a little bit of concern about taking it out of this total amount, again, because the DNR spent $1.3 million on CWD response last year. And so this would reduce the ability that we would have to respond with those general fund dollars and may mean that we need to go back to subsidizing the CWD efforts with Game and Fish Fund. But again, overall, we do support allocating the CWD funding in accordance with the governor's recommendation. The second part of this initiative was deer management research funding of $1.8 million out of the Game and Fish Fund. And in this item, the House bill matches the governor's budget, and we very much appreciate that. This funding is to support research and activities that were indicated as recommendations in the Office of the Legislative Auditor report on DNR's deer management program, and it will lead to direct improvements in the way that we are able to manage Minnesota's deer. Our fourth priority related to public waters management. The governor had recommended $1.6 million in general fund plus a fee increase that increased the fees permit fees from a range of $100. The range was $100 to $1,000. The new recommended range is $300 to $3,000. The House position included the fee increase at the governor's recommended level, but includes half of the governor's recommendation of general fund spending for that item. Given that reduction in general fund spending, that will impact our ability to provide technical assistance to local units of government and landowners who may need the assistance, and also potentially lengthen permitting times. It may also impact the number of staff that we have doing that work. We have been short funding of that work for some time, and we have been reallocating funds from other programs, but we have exhausted our ability to do that. So fully funding this program is important. And lastly, our fifth priority related to the comprehensive study in the Pineland Sands area. The governor had recommended $1.8 million in one-time funding to do this comprehensive study to better understand the impacts of land use conversion in this sensitive soils area, and the House bill does not fund the Pineland Sands study. So that is of concern to us because it does not allow us to better to understand comprehensively the cumulative effects of the groundwater use and land conversion in that area. So in general, again, we support much of the House bill. It matches very well with the governor's budget in terms of those priorities. There are just a few other comments related to other items in the bill that I'd like to make as well. And the first of those is related to the legal cost request. The House bill does fund the legal costs, but in an amount that is less than the governor has recommended. And so I would like to note for the committee that that may mean the DNR likely will be back in the near future asking for additional funding to fund our legal costs related to the many activities we have now related to Polymet, White Bear Lake, and others. So we may be back to seek additional funding if we run out before this biennium, or our alternative is to find other general fund dollars within the agency, and then that would impact the work that is currently occupying that general fund funding. Another issue that I would like to mention relates to the operation of the Hill Annex Mine State Park. This language is on lines 2610 to 2623 in the bill. And I want to be really clear with this. DNR has committed to continue to operate Hill Annex Mine State Park at its current level of service. We have met with the communities up there regarding a transition to a different operating model over time, and in the interim we have committed to operating that park. Our concern is that the line item appropriation of $260,000 in funding for this park specifically out of the state park account, in addition to what we currently have allocated in budget, essentially appears to double the operating spending for the park, but we are maintaining the existing level of service. And so I would just note that we don't need double the budget to operate the park at the same level. Again, we're committed to continuing to operate that park at its existing levels through 2021. And then the last issue I'd just like to mention is the portion of the bill related to the establishment of an outdoor recreation office. We very much support the concept of an outdoor recreation office as an engagement strategy to bring the many outdoor recreation interests into collaboration with one another. We do, however, have some concerns given our experience in looking at other states that have similar offices. Their success really depends on a robust engagement of all of those interests up front to clearly define the scope and the purpose of these offices. And so we want to make sure that that robust and inclusive engagement happens on the front end. Mr. Chair, there are probably a few other minor comments on the bill, but I think we can not worry about those for purposes of today. Those will work themselves out as we continue working on the bill. And I know you have a long list of testifiers, so I think I will end there. And again, just want to emphasize that in large part, this House bill does meet the priorities in the governor's budget recommendation, and we very much appreciate that.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Well, welcome to the committee. you mentioned, and I just want to make sure I got this correct, earlier about potential issue with not being able or having to maybe reduce the amount of aid you provided to local units of government for permitting. Would that involve, for example, townships who quite often have to have a permit to adjust, do a culvert or fix a bridge or fix a road? Are we talking about potentially reducing that level of local government aid for those kind of permits?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, yes, if that is related to public waters permitting, which often the circumstance you've described is, yes, that's the concern, is we currently do not have sufficient funding to maintain the level of service that we would like to provide on those permitting processes and to consult on whether a permit, you know, is needed or not. And so that's the concern here. Without fully funding that, we would not be able to provide the level of service.
I guess, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, I appreciate you pointing that out, because that is a huge, huge circumstance for the district I represent, because we've got 90-some townships, and every one of them's got 14 culverts and so many miles of road. And so and that's a pretty small unit of the government, and they don't have the expertise that the department does. So I would hope we can maybe figure out a way to remedy that, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome, Commissioner. Question I have, a couple of things. You talked about the Hill Annex mine operation, and you said in your comments that you're committed to maintaining the current level of service at the Hill Annex Mine. And I've asked this question before. Are you committed to doing the same thing at, say, Lake Brunson and Old Mill and Hayes Lake State Parks?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, as long as we are whole on our funding, we can continue to operate parks at the same level. I think along with our system plan, we continually evaluate services at each of our parks.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that. So hypothetically, if you're not whole at the end of this budget cycle, are you going to continue to operate the Hill Annex Mine at the current level and possibly reduce services in other parks?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, if we are not made whole, we are committed to maintaining services at Hill Annex Mine State Park.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you. With regards to CWD, and this is off the topic of the bill, but I was stopped by a person in the hallway after a meeting this morning, and they showed me a dot on a map that showed that there was now a CWD positive deer that had been detected outside of the current area. Do you have plans to expand your CWD surveillance area?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, are you saying outside of the 603 zone, the Winona zone, and the Crowing zone?
The 603 or
so 4. 603 is the Preston zone. So we are currently doing surveillance in the Preston area. We are doing surveillance in the Winona, Houston County area where we have found a couple of positive deer. We have not yet set up a disease management zone. That likely is forthcoming. And then we have the area in Crowing County where the positive was found outside of the facility there, where we are also doing surveillance and monitoring at this time.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for a point of clarification, the difference between a surveillance area and a disease management area is what?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, there are additional restrictions that come with that disease management zone, such as carcass exportation restrictions.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Commissioner. And so when you actually go into an area and start depopulating the deer, where does that fall into those two categories, or is that a separate category?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, we are doing response in terms of depopulation, the special hunts, landowner shooting permits, as well as the targeted culling in all three of those areas. I think what may happen in the Winona, Houston area specifically is it will become its own deer permit area zone. So, for example, the Preston area is now deer permit area 603. It's a disease management zone. It gets it all its own permit area so that we are managing that area specifically. I would suspect we will be doing the same thing in the other areas, assuming the results come back and it appears that we need to continue to manage it because there appears to be disease prevalent on the landscape. But we're still waiting for all of those samples to come back.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just real quickly then, so to the point of the citizen in the hallway that pointed out the dot on the outside of that special zone, now the 603, are you planning to expand the depopulation around that newfound CWD positive?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, well, we're already doing those activities in that area where those positives were found in Winona, kind of Winona, Houston County area. We are already offering landowner permits. We are already doing targeted calling. My guess is, again, we will establish a disease management zone. We will probably look at things like more liberal hunting regulations for the fall seasons and those kinds of things. So, yes, I expect there will be additional depopulation activities there, but those activities are already going on in response to those positives that were found.
Thank you.
Representative Backer.
Thank you, Chair. Question, when you do a disease, Commissioner, a disease management zone, what type of timeline? Do you have a feeling how long you do that?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Backer, so typically what we like to see is for an area to be disease-free or to not have positive samples come back for a period of 3 years. So it's a rolling 3 years. So because we've, you know, found positives this year, it would be at least another 3 years that we would be looking at that. And if we find a positive next year, it would be 3 years beyond that. And so that's part of the challenge of this, is whenever we find a positive, we know we are committed to doing that surveillance, at least, perhaps maybe not the full disease management zone, but we know we are committed to doing surveillance for at least another 3 years.
Yeah, just one more follow-up, and I appreciate that, Commissioner. When you do surveillance, are you taking a sample then every 6 months, 3 months? What's your guidelines on that, please?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Backer, so we need the samples come from harvested deer. So we take them either in the fall hunting season. We'll have mandatory testing where every deer taken by a hunter during those seasons has to have a sample submitted. That's where we get our largest sample size. Then as we're offering landowner permits, typically in a specified amount of time, we will try to get a large enough sample between all of those methods, landowner shooting permits, special hunts, and the targeted culling, to get enough samples within a specific geographic area that we feel like we've sampled enough of the population. It's not necessarily over, you know, regular time intervals, but what we're trying to do is get a substantial number of deer from that area to understand what the disease rate or infection rate might be in that area.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner, on the language, and it's helpful that you provide us with some monetary changes that are possible. I want to zero in on the guidance both for solid waste and for processors, and whether they're processors that are individual hunters or whether they're commercial processors. And do you feel that the, and is there any additional language that would help with providing guidance to either individual hunters, working with the Pollution Control Agency on solid waste management of carcasses, or dealing with the positive carcasses and how we would deal with those?
Mr. Chair, I don't have any additional language to suggest. Again, you know, we're supportive of those concepts. We have commenced some conversations with Minnesota Pollution Control Agency over the disposal of carcasses, and I think, you know, this is one of those evolving issues as we continue to learn more about how this disease transmits and how long it persists. Those are important conversations for us to continue to have so that we make sure that we are disposing of them properly, and then also that we are providing, you know, best practices out to hunters. And that's really been a key piece of our response, is that outreach, not only about the, you know, requirement to submit samples and the carcass import or export restrictions, but also, you know, these best practices.
Any other questions for the commissioner? Well, thank you.
Thank you. Again, appreciate the opportunity to speak to the bill.
Next up, Ms. Gauthier, Assistant Commissioner, Pollution Control Agency. Or Kirk? Or both? Mr. Kadelka, welcome.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and we'll only have one person down here to testify to save time. First of all, again, thank you for all the work the committee has done in putting together this bill. There are a number of things in here that we're very happy to see, including a number of the governor's recommendations for full funding, and those include important projects such as continuing our work in the St. Louis River Area of Concern, starting work on climate outreach and engagement statewide to create a path forward for the state. Our remedial activities, looking at closed sites for vapor intrusion and contaminants are emerging concern, really speeding up that timeline on sites that need additional attention. Also speeding up and accelerating efforts to phase out TCE used by Minnesota businesses and going to less toxic alternatives. Money to continue work at the freeway landfill in Burnsville, along with working with communities and PFA and our wastewater treatment facilities, and also our local units of government and railroads through the pipeline safety funding. In addition, the a new initiative for food waste that's included in here and in the governor's budget to help with food rescue and other barriers that we see to organics collection and processing. So there are a lot of good things in this bill that we are appreciative of, but there are a couple things we just want to note and touch base on. There were two items that were smaller recommendations in the governor, and those were the business-friendly data services and the recycling market development. Both of these we see are key initiatives as we move forward as a state. The first is the business-friendly data services. This is something we're looking to admit to accelerate under this administration. The way the funding is put, it does create a ramp down and ramp up where there's no dollars for one fiscal year and then the dollars all come in the second fiscal year, so that will create a little bit of a challenge as we plan in terms of the projects we do and their implementation. And also market development. This is a key area as we see a number of markets here in Minnesota and really across the nation dealing with the reduction in the amount of materials that can go to the Far East, including China. And just to echo the comments earlier made by the DNR commissioner, there is the reduction in the funding for legal activities by MPCA and DNR to defend our permits. And just as the previous commissioner mentioned, we will continue to work with this amount and may need to come back at a future date to supplement those dollars as the needs arise. There was one governor's initiative that was not recommended, and that was the work for the EIS in the Karst region in southeast Minnesota. The dollars that were requested by the governor would allow for EQB to start this important work and really scope and answer a number of questions on a more holistic approach than a case-by-case situation we deal currently with feedlot permits that come before the agency. An item that we want to also highlight is the MPCA Citizens Board. As we've testified before, we believe in terms of policy, we should really look at what are the goals that are looking to be achieved here and see which ways those can be, we achieve those goals. What is troubling here is then the dollars then for the agency, close to $700,000, would be absorbed by the agency in its current budget to make room for the board. And so that is a large amount of funding that would then have to come from other programs as a result of this change. Some other items we just want to highlight on concerns are the cap being created for the transfer of dollars from the Environmental Fund to the Remediation Fund. This has been something historically the agency has testified on and concerns about putting a cap on this. The reason there's a statutory allowance for transfer from the Environmental Fund to the Remediation Fund is to ensure that in times of crisis or emergency, dollars can be available to the agency to work on those situations as they come up. A cap sets the potential situation where we would not be able to transfer dollars from the Environmental Fund to deal with the situation when the legislature is out. And an example of that is a couple years ago where Cottage Grove, towards the very end of session, ended up needing a new drinking water treatment system. And that was a $3 to $4 to $5 million project. CAP does create a situation where that we may not be able to respond in those situations. Another piece with the remediation fund that we have a concern dealing with is the $1.8 million being transferred to the dry cleaner account from the remediation fund. As previously testified, we have concerns about the precedent and expectations this sets and that the state will cover the cost of cleanup for responsible parties moving forward. There's also a question of equity. While these are small businesses and we understand that they have at times reduced dollars to be able to meet these needs, these are not the only small businesses that the agency asks to do cleanups, and are we treating them similarly? We do appreciate the study piece looking at collecting from insurance policies to help supplement the fund there. We agree with that policy, but believe that if we're looking at that option, there are a number of other options that should be on the table as we continue to move forward and look at ways to solve all the problems with the dry cleaner fund. Those are our thoughts on the Article 1 dealing with the funding. Just real quickly on Article 2 dealing with the various policy pieces. We'd like to continue working with the various authors on provisions including the carpet stewardship, waste tires, and others to tighten up the language and work on some technical changes. And that also includes Section 2, the provision dealing with the civil penalties. We believe that we just need to make sure we clarify some of the language on where the 40% applies to, whether it's a civil penalty or all the of dollars, just to make sure we don't have any unintended consequences through this process. Other than that, we do appreciate other changes made throughout the bill and policy language, including the natural resources damages account and the closed landfill investment fund changes to allow for the agency to continue to use the statutory appropriation, but also provide a level of oversight for the legislature so they have information as they move forward in these areas. Mr. Chair and committee, with that, I'd like to wrap up our comments and appreciate the opportunity again to continue working with the committee and the chair as this bill moves forward.
Any questions? Ms. Taylor, was that environment cap funding, was that in the governor's budget?
Mr. Chair, members, it was capped in the governor's budget as introduced. The language was at least.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kadelka, the 40% fee, was that the FULE bill where it was a part of that SEP program, SEP? Is that what you're talking about,
Mr. Kadelka?
Mr. Chair and committee members, correct. It's Section 2 of Article 2, and we just believe it's a quick technical check that can be made overall with the policy overall. We're comfortable with the policy, just a technical fix, we believe.
Representative Wagenius and then Representative Backer.
Thank you. You mentioned your concern with the karst area and doing a EIS on the nitrates. We've known about the nitrates in that area for as long as I can remember. And we've known that people have wells that are so contaminated they can't use them. So I couldn't understand the scope of this new study, so maybe you can help us out here. Because the thing we don't know about is what about the pesticides in folks' drinking water. And when ag tests for wells, now it tests for pesticides, but I didn't think you were planning to do that.
Mr. Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the dollars would allow for us, let me back up a little bit. You're correct that we are seeing the sampling results from Department of Ag in the area and the private wells dealing with nitrates. This study would allow us to go a little deeper into to find out what are all the causes to start creating, to see if there are other avenues that need to be fixed moving forward. In terms of what would all be covered under it, these dollars would help with that scoping process through ETB. So that isn't all determined. That would go through the process, much like any other EIS, but this would be done on a more regional basis. So those things are yet to be determined and are things that, as the public proposes, may or may not be things that could fit into the project.
Representative Wagenius.
You're talking about sources? What other sources are you talking about? We've just known about this problem for so long and done nothing. It feels a little bit like procrastination to me.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, often as these permits come before, it's one facility conversation that we have, and it talks about the subset of feedlots that are dealt with through the permitting process. However, we know there are numerous facilities in the area that may also be contributing to the overall condition in the area, and so this would allow for us to look at all that together in one review. An EIS or an EAW on one specific facility only looks at that facility, and so we believe that we should step back and look at all the potential contributors.
President Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. On the carpet language, you mentioned that you would like to see it tighten up. Do you have some specifics what you would like to see tighten up?
Ms. Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, they're very technical changes on some definitions in that. There wouldn't be substantial policy changes at all. It's more just some technical wording that needs to be looked at.
President Backer.
Just to let the committee know, about an hour before this we reconvened at 5, I had a constituent who owns a furniture store who called and was very concerned about the carpet. They're in Morris. Just the logistics of recycling it, also does it really show a benefit when you have all that transportation cost? He said, looking at it, does that because a lot of the carpet he replaces is dirty, very dirty. So do we have to shampoo it before we submit it? So there are a lot of concerns out there and so forth. So I would, I guess I would say tread very carefully on this. So that's my two cents. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Kadunka. Mr. Jashke.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and members. John Jaske, Executive Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources. Well, thank you for the opportunity to comment on your DE version of House File 2209, the Omnibus Environment Natural Resources Budget Bill. We appreciate the time we've had to spend with you and your members and others as well, talking about components of this bill and other issues that are related to it. There's two provisions in the bill that relate to the governor's recommendations. I'd like to highlight those specifically. Support for the critical information technology infrastructure at our agency and the support for the necessary operational adjustments. The first of those is found on line 34.11, and that has to do with our wetland banking database, which is outdated, unsupported, and vulnerable to external attacks. A new database will, of course, provide the services that people expect these days with safe, secure, and reliable information that allows the transactions that are necessary to make those permit decisions go well for both parties. Another piece of that funding is to update our e-link database, which is the system we use for local governments to report both the fiscal aspects of their grants as well as the outcomes that they're estimating for those state dollars to achieve. On the operational adjustments, this is for things such as leases, general IT increases, retirement compensations, et cetera, that if we don't have those resources to pay for those costs, we have to try and find some other way to take it out of program responsibilities, and that's just not the best idea. So we appreciate your support for the governor's position on both of those items. There are also several additional one-time fiscal items in the bill under our agency, and we've reviewed all of those and have no concerns about them. And if they are passed, we would carry those out as directed if they're put into law. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, remember, I'd like to point out our soil and water conservation districts provide a vitally important and cost-effective conservation service at that local level, and you've heard from them already and maybe will again. We appreciate your recognition of their work. You've got some funding in here, one-time funding, and we appreciate that. We also look forward to working with you in the legislature to come up with a viable path forward provides that sufficient, stable, and consistent base level funding that they need to operate so they can continue to be the boots on the ground that everyone expects them to be to help Minnesota citizens be good stewards of our land. Finally, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the time during the committee proceedings prior to today, and we look forward to working with you in the weeks ahead. I'll take any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Jashke? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Auney and Mr. Poach.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Keith Auney. I am the owner of East Metro Clean and Press in West St. Paul, Minnesota, and I'm also serving as the president of the Minnesota Cleaners Association. I would like to thank Representative Hansen and co-authors for helping the dry cleaning industry. The industry proposal this year is one of fairness. Keep the dry cleaners in business, continue funding the cleanups, and continue bringing in the annual sales tax revenue of $5 million. We are thankful for the short-term solution that will be revisited after the MPCA submits their report next January, when a long-term solution will be sought, including a cap on our registration fees. Thank you again, Representative Hansen and committee members.
Mr. Poach.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Dart Poach, and I have a family business called Don's Leather Cleaning, and I also serve on the board of directors, too. And I was told to keep this real quick, so this is going to be the quickest one ever. We really appreciate all here to not let our livelihoods and retirements be taken away from our family businesses. this legislation goes a long way in reaching our legislative goals of 30 years ago. We thank you again.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Smith. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Ken Smith. I'm the president and CEO of Evergreen Energy. I want to thank you for recognizing the importance of properly managing wastewood streams and for including additional funding for wastewood collection and for use as biomass fuel. Our sister companies, Environmental Wood Supply and St. Paul Cogeneration, operate at the very back end of the tree waste management system, and we know firsthand that proper management of large volumes of tree waste generated in the metro region is from storm damage and particularly diseased trees and emerald ash borer is very important to communities and businesses. For 16 years, we provided this resource to the communities and a critical resource, and we use a large volume of waste wood to heat buildings downtown St. Paul, over 200 buildings, and generate electricity. And the waste wood comes from about 115 communities in 22 counties. We do have a suggested change that we would add processing on line 41.21 as a in addition to collection and transportation. And I want to thank you again for recognizing this the importance of this topic and for providing the additional funding. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Smith? Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Buck.
41.21.
Welcome.
Welcome, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Leanne Buck. I'm the executive director for the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Again, I want to just say thank you to the committee and the budget. I'm here today to convey our members' concerns regarding the shortfall for the SWCD funding. We do appreciate that we are being considered in the budget, and the bill does propose a $3.5 million per year, a $7 million over the biennium, in one-time new funding for the districts. We do see a shared commitment from the state and local government, and unlike other LGUs, soil and water districts do not have a dedicated funding at the local level and at the state level. So as we move forward, again, we're concerned that this budget doesn't convey a commitment to the long-term stable and predictable funding source for districts to work directly with the citizens. And many of the things we do come from the state as well as the local, and we work together on a voluntary basis with our members. So again, we do appreciate the opportunity, and we look forward as we have future discussions as we continue to think about predictable funding for our districts. So with that, I want to say thank you.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Want to run over a few provisions of the bill that are of particular interest to us. Obviously, many of the provisions in here affect cities, but I just want to call out a few and give a couple of comments.
I don't want you to run over them.
I will try not to. Thank you. Related to the Pollution Control Agency sections of the budget, Mr. Chair, there are two sections, one on lines 2.13 through 2.32, the other on 5.11 through 5.30, that provide funding for a number of PCA programs to assist MPDS permit holders to do economic analysis of impacts of standards and to provide a municipal liaison to help with permitting and wastewater standards compliance. That has been a useful program for us. We very much appreciate that it's in here, and we think it's a program the agency is doing a nice job with. So we're glad to see that continued. Secondly, on score recycling, we're glad to see that the previous baseline of $17.25 million a year from the solid waste tax does continue to go into that program. We also do appreciate seeing the $400,000 in the second year appropriation for market research on recycled products. That's going to be very essential as we look at how we're going to handle the international change to plastics recycling that China's decisions have thrust upon us. We're going to need some hard work to figure out how we're going to start managing our plastic waste here better to find markets for it. So we appreciate that. We do also support the provisions found on page 41 related to additional funding for SCORE, the $3 million a year for waste wood disposal, the $750,000 a year for managing food waste, and the $400,000 a year for additional recycling grants. We do wish that the funding for that was something that was included as part of this bill. Those are programs we think are very, very important and would have preferred to see the target in this committee be able to work on that. But we'll continue to work with the chair and the legislature as we look for ways to address this. Just overall, very much want to thank the committee and the chair for continuing to recognize the challenges that counties and cities are facing with managing our solid waste and the requirements we have under statute to do that. And I think you'll hear that from others later. Finally, on the MPCA, we appreciate the funding that was provided for salt applicator training. Even though that goes for private salt applicators, the agency does need funding to provide that training, and 80% of the attendees of that training to date have been local government employees. So we are hoping that we can clarify as this moves forward that local government attendees would continue to be able to go to these trainings at a hopefully reduced price because they're not asking for certification. They're just trying to get the basic training. Mr. Chair, then quickly on to DNR. The big issue that we have talked with this committee and many other committees about over the past few years on that is Emerald Ash Borer. Very grateful for the funding that shows up in here. This is a first major step in seeing some funding arrive for that. Mr. Chair, on page 22, lines 9 through 13 is the first section that identifies funding for the DNR to go work in cooperation with local governments to identify and convert ash stands. Our read of that is that that would be money to replace ash trees in urban forests. I believe it was described that way briefly during the walkthrough of the bill this morning in the spreadsheet, but we do want to clarify that that is for programs to, for grants to local governments to do that work, not just for the DNR to look at places where they might want to do ash stands. So we would like to work on some language to clarify that with the chair as this moves forward. The next section is two paragraphs down. It's on lines 19 through 24 of page 22. And that's the $1 million a year for the next biennium and then $665,000 ongoing for grants to local governments to remove and dispose of ash trees in quarantine counties. Very much appreciate that. This is something that we have needed the state to be a partner with us on for a very long time, and it's going to be very helpful. I would point out that this pot just goes for removal and disposal, and there are a number of other things that are missing right now. In particular, developing plans for what we're going to do with our urban forests is not included in either of these pots right now. And neither is treatment, which is a pretty key part of many plans to slow the disease down long enough so we don't have to clear cut the entire urban canopy as our only means of complying. I'm looking forward to working with the chair on language on this. I think there are ways we can do that, for instance, to have the grant programs include as eligible cost share treatment costs that the cities and counties are using on, for parts of their program without having the pots directly funded. And then finally, on that, Mr. Chair, we do want to make sure that the DNR has clear authority to set up the criteria for the grants program. That doesn't seem to be here right now, so we would want to make sure that it's clear that, that they can do that so that we can end up with a good list of, we're going to have a vastly more applications for this funding than are available, so they're going to need a way to sort through them. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you. Mr. Woods. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for inclusion of Representative Sandel's bill to determine where enhancing groundwater replenishment rates makes geologic and economic sense both. This project arose out of three separate groundwater reports that freshwater published between 2016 and 2018, and will leverage existing geologic atlases the legislature has funded historically. Again, we are grateful for your inclusion of the bill and the opportunity to speak to its merits this evening. That concludes my testimony.
Any questions? Thank you. Mr. Larson. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Dan Larson, Minnesota Four-Wheel Drive Association, here today to express disappointment in on the decision of the committee not to include the provisions in Representative Eklund's bill, House File 1454, the border-to-border off-road touring route bill, in the committee omnibus bill. So I want to just reiterate a little bit about what this project is and what we've been working on really for the last, well, this is our fifth year in working on this project. So so at its core, the B2B is essentially a signed alignment across the state for highway licensed vehicles on legal existing roads that funds itself with revenues from the off-road vehicle account. The off-road touring is a growth industry. There's a lot of demand. There's a lot of people want to do this. A lot of people are doing it in other states. Minnesota Four Wheel Drive Association recognizes this and wants to do it right. That's why the provisions in the bill included funding for a statewide master plan. As I know and understand it, we're the only group that's doing that. We're funding our own statewide master plan so that we're recognizing that if we're going to build a system, we've looked at what other motorized groups have done, snowmobiles many years ago, ATVs, and now we have a chance to do this. We look at this as an opportunity to do the same thing, and we want to do it right, members. The second provision is a maintenance fund to address the impacts on local roads. This is what we heard from local governments when we did the listening sessions. What are you going to do about the impacts on the local roads? Well, we put the answer to that was in this bill. We put money in the bill and some criteria. The third piece was to hire an administrator to work with those local governments. And the fourth piece was something DNR wanted, and we agreed that if we're going to be doing extra work, we should have some extra funding for our staff. And so that piece was added. That's the only piece that's different than the bill that passed through this committee and to the governor into the omnibus bill last year that got vetoed. So this is nothing new to this committee or the legislature. And So I have to say we object to not being funded and to being left out of this bill. We don't see where the conflict is. And this is a group that wants to do things right and is doing things right and not being recognized for it. So that's my testimony. Thank you for the opportunity.
Any questions? Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm curious to know why he didn't include it in the bill.
Representative Fabian, it's in the governor's budget, so it's actually provided for without any additional line item. It's in the... Ms. Taylor? Mr. Hagerman? Mr. Hagemeyer.
Mr. Chair, The governor's change items were included. The only cut that was made was from the ATV account. So what the governor proposed was from the off-road vehicle account was $525,000 per year. Some of that was to enforcement, $400,000 of which was to DNR for ORV trail management funding. But in the governor's change item, they have an ORV account included that includes $200,000 maintenance fund for border-to-border touring route listed in the governor's page change item. I don't know if the DNR planned on doing that internally within that $400,000, but we didn't make any changes to the language that the governor had recommended, which includes that on page 68 of your budget book for the DNR's portion.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But where is that in? I realize it's in the governor's budget book, but where is that reflected in the bill?
Mr. Chair, we took the language from the governor's bill. It doesn't specifically call that out. So if the agency wanted to say how they planned on using it, I don't know. But we didn't specifically include any language, but didn't specifically remove any language from the governor's recommendation either.
Mr. Chair and members, does that also address the master plan, the contract for the administrator?
Mr. Larson, it provides for $200,000.
The maintenance fund.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Is DNR still here?
Looks like no. Thank you. Ms. Zumach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Karen Zumach. I'm here for multiple reasons. I stand as the Director of Community Forestry for Tree Trust, a nonprofit based here in the Twin Cities. I'm also the President of the Minnesota Shade Tree Advisory Committee, a committee comprised of about 400 members of city foresters, professional arborists, and citizens interested in trees. And I'm here to thank you for the inclusion of Emerald Ash Borer funding in the budget bill, and am so appreciative of this opportunity to help communities manage their emerald ash borer infestations. It's been a long time coming, and I'm very grateful to be able to be here to have this testimony being heard. As many of you may have heard, a 18th county was found today, with Stearns County being quarantined and found for emerald ash borer. The situation will continue to grow, and it's something we will need to continue to invest resources into, so I'm happy to see that that's happening. It's critical as we move forward to help communities rebuild their urban forest, and it's good to know that these trees that we'll be planting now will be the trees that will be shading our streets and towns for generations to come, and will go a long way in improving our environmental quality across the state. Also, I'd like to say, as in my other job as the Director of Community Forestry, the No Child Left Inside funding is critical to helping our young students understand and appreciate the importance of nature. My favorite days are when I'm outside planting trees with elementary age school children who have never, ever gotten dirty before. So this is a great opportunity to increase that across the state. So we're very grateful to see that included as well. I'm happy to take questions, and thank you again for this inclusion.
Any questions? Thank you. Mr. Martinson.
Welcome.
Chair Hansen, members, I'm Brian Martinson, policy analyst with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I would like to address a handful of provisions included in this legislation on behalf of AMC, our affiliates, and partners. The Association of County Feedlot Officers would like to thank you for the appropriation to develop new training online curriculum. Turnover among CFOs is extremely high, and access to timely, Flexible, relevant training options is one of the major contributing factors. This funding will help us begin to provide updated and more accessible training options for this field. AMC appreciates the funding for removal and disposal of trees in EAB quarantine counties, for recycling market development, and the direct funding for SWCDs, our partners on environmental matters. Finally, AMC, the Partnership on Waste and Energy, Minnesota Resource Recovery Association, and Solid Waste Administrators Association strongly support the authorization language in this bill for an additional $2.9 million in year one and $3.5 million in each of the following years in additional SCORE dollars for recycling, the new investment of $3 million annually for collecting and transporting wood waste to the district energy for disposal, and allocations for organics and recycling grants. We are, however, disappointed that the bill does not include the funding to appropriate these additional investments. We do have concerns with the legislation that would provide these funds and look forward to working with the author on those issues. Thank you for recognizing the challenges counties are facing dealing with significant and costly solid waste problems facing Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. Ms. Josephson.
Chair Hansen, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 2209 as amended by the DE3 amendment. My name is Cara Josephson. I represent the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. Since 1974, we've used science and the law to defend Minnesota's environment and the people that depend on it. MCEA thanks the author, Chair Hansen, as well as all the members of this committee who have contributed to the bill. We're pleased to see that the overall target for this bill reflects Minnesota's priorities and invests in protecting and preserving our shared natural resources. The overall $357 million budget is a $33 million increase over the base, which allows for critically needed investments. For example, support for Clean Air Minnesota, which MCEA and the Chamber of Commerce co-chair, support for continued restoration of the St. Louis River area of concern, funding for the MPCA to do needed public outreach and education to address Minnesota's changing climate and needed policy responses, and grants from the General Fund to local soil and water conservation districts to support their boots on the ground work to protect and restore our waters. There are also a number of important changes to statutory language that MCEA supports, some of which we have testified in favor of earlier in session. For example, Article 2, Section 45, which restores the MPCA Citizens Board. We support the restoration of the board, which provides an important access for Minnesotan residents in the sometimes arcane processes of the MPCA. We also support Article 2, Section 2, which is a provision from Representative Lee's bill, House File 167. It will direct a portion of permit violation litigations or settlements over $250,000 to the local community health board. This will be particularly important for lower-income communities and communities of color who are often disproportionately impacted by violations. MCEA also supports Article 2, Section 51, which provides liability protection for salt applicators to help reduce the amount of salt used on private property and reduce salination of our waters. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 2209.
Any questions? Thank you. Ms. Weifel. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to testify today on the DE amendment to HF 2209. My name is Elizabeth Wafel, and I am here on behalf of the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Organization. This is a membership organization of more than 100 cities, counties, businesses, a tribe, and individuals dedicated to enhancing outdoor recreation opportunities outside the metropolitan area. We want to thank the committee for all the hard work you've put into this bill. It includes money for proposals that we support, including grant money for local park and trails programs run through the DNR, as well as the establishment of the No Child Left Behind grant program. However, we want to point out a glaring omission in the bill and ask that the committee correct this as the bill moves forward. If you look at the bill at page 38, you will notice at lines 11 through 15 that there is $2.54 million per year for the operations of Metropolitan Area Regional Parks and Trails. And further, if you look at lines 16 through 23, you will see an additional $6.6 million for similar purposes. Now, if you look at the entire bill, you'll also notice that there is nothing for the operations of Regional Parks and Trails in Greater Minnesota. Further, the request for funding for the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission for $450,000, which is about a tenth of that going to the Metropolitan Parks, was not included in this bill either. We do not begrudge the Metropolitan Parks and Trails their funding. We're not asking that it be taken away. However, we find it problematic that the other 80 counties and cities in those counties in Greater Minnesota are being ignored. If you look at our legislation, which is HF 868, I even brought a copy with me, you'll see a cross-section of Democrats and Republicans, Metropolitan Rural Legislators as authors, Representative Sundin, Representative Purcell, Becker Finn, Lilly, Brand, Erdahl, Eklund, and others. Yet this bill wasn't given a hearing, and our request did not move forward. We know that money is always tight, but in the interest of equity, we ask that if this bill is going forward with significant amounts of money for the Metropolitan Council for their regional parks and trails, that you give serious consideration to giving Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Regional Commission, again, that ask that was only a 10% of that which is being awarded to the Metropolitan Parks and Trails. We think this is an inequity and ask that you correct it. Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Mr. Van de Linde.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members. Aaron Vandalin, School Trust Lands Director. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to this bill tonight. I first want to also thank you for including the Office of School Trust Land budget as the governor's recommendation in here. And extending two appropriations that I have not yet spent because I'm a little conservative of how I'm spending these school trust dollars. I wanted to direct your attention to a problematic portion of the bill, though, and that's for the school trust office funding. It's on lines 31.25 to 31.29. And in my words, the offending clauses should be transferred on line 31.26. And the way I read this is a discretionary appropriation to the school trust lands office, but we don't know who's going to make the decision on whether or not those funds should be transferred. So what it really does is put the office in an untenable situation for workforce planning and our school trust land analysis projects that we've been using the funds for in the past. With that, I would just ask that we return to the funding from prior bienniums that say that the money is transferred to the school trust lands director. Thank you.
Ms. Taylor, where did the language come from?
Mr. Chair and members, this language was in the governor's budget as introduced.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that was in the governor's budget, but is it your intention as the chair and the author of this bill to leave that as should instead of, Ms. Taylor, we've changed the word from shall to must to shall. I'm sorry, I don't remember.
Representative Fabian, we'll make the technical correction. We're just making the point that this language we got from the, this was a language as it was introduced, so we'll make the correction to make it correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Quillis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis, and I'll be wearing a couple of hats here this evening. Mr. Chairman, first off, representing the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association, I wanted to thank you for the placeholder and the money that was dedicated to the Adopt-a-Dumpster program, setting up the guidelines for transporting and processing deer and the money to the University of Minnesota, and specifically in the language and developing the guidelines, looking at the handling of deer in the field and transporting of the carcasses and the taxidermists in the meat processors. So we thank you for that. Language that's in there, I understand that the commissioner has got some concerns about the funding on that, and look forward to working with you, her, and the other stakeholders as we move forward. Long process coming through, Mr. Chairman. And then I'm going to be very brief and put the pressure on Mr. Bowen, because I think he's the last one on the list, and we'll get everybody out of here before puck drop at 7:05, Mr. Chairman. Wearing my Chamber of Commerce hat, the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, thank you for the funding. As Ms. Josephson mentioned, the Clean Air Minnesota funding that is included in there. But then a couple of concerns, Mr. Chairman, on regarding the flame retardants and the carpet recycling. Look forward to working with you and Representative Becker Finn as we move through in this process. There's been some good conversations going, and I think there's already been some changes to the carpet recycling as we've gone through the process already, Mr. Chairman. And then finally, the placeholder, the money that's in there right now, Mr. Chairman, I think we can have a conversation about the money as we move forward, but the language that's in there right now dealing with TCE and go through, I think the governor has set up in his revised budget a good program to set up and further evaluate and address the risks and working with the regulated facilities as partners as we move forward on this. And I wanted to point that out. Like I said, I'm not sure if the numbers are exactly where we need to be, but wanted to point you out that I thought that the language that's in the revised budget was a good language, Mr. Chairman, and thank you.
Any questions? Mr. Bowen. And if there's anyone else who would like to testify, get on deck, I guess. Mr. Bowen.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good evening. I am here representing actually four different groups tonight. I'm representing the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota, Amateur Riders and Motorcycles of Minnesota, the 4x4 off-road group, and also MinUSA. Doug Franzen couldn't be here tonight because he was doing his grandfather chores, so he asked me to speak for him as well. Our concern has to do with the outdoor recreational office that's being set up. When we appeared before this committee, when it was before the committee, we expressed pretty strong reservations against it. And since that time, we have had meetings with the proponents, and we have suggested language that could make it more palatable. A lot of that language is in the bill right now. Unfortunately, there's one provision that we really don't understand what it means or why it's in the bill, because it seems like a bit of an overreach, and that is line 8.27, I'm sorry, 82.7 and 82.8. where it talks about coordinating outdoor recreational policy and management among state and federal and local government entities. Well, folks, that makes us a little nervous considering our history. You know, and I think it's an overreach for this bill, because I think what they need to be coordinating are opportunities out there. We don't want to have to report to another management organization, or we don't want to get into policy issues. I mean, I think we do work with the National Forest Service, and we work with the counties, and I mean, we all do work together, and we can certainly extend that to other types of recreation. We even work with them as well. So that line, what I would suggest, we would be much more comfortable with it if it said opportunities rather than policy and management, because we don't know what that means. And I think, frankly, opportunities really describes what this bill is about. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Carnival.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looks like I'm the anchor man tonight. I hope to be brief as well.
I'm not quite sure about that.
I, like a number of other people, have a number of clients who are interested in the bill. A number of them would like to thank you and support the provisions of the bill. For instance, the Emmer-Lashbor funding is something my clients, the Minnesota Landscape Nursery Association, the Minnesota Recreation and Parks Association, and the Minnesota Golf Association all support. The oversalting provisions in the bill that Representative Fisher championed are also supported by the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, the Building Owners and Managers Association of Minneapolis, and the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. The park and trail funding in the bill is supported by the Minnesota Recreation and Park Association, and we thank you very much for that, as we do the No Child Left Inside provisions as well in the bill. And my client, the National Waste and Recycling Association, has always and will continue to support the SCORE funding in the bill and even increase SCORE funding in the bill. However, we do have some concerns about the source of funding for increases in SCORE and the proposal that is included likely in the tax bill that would increase the solid waste tax, in our opinion, is not the appropriate source. I'm not sure everyone realizes how heavily solid waste is taxed. The state tax on solid waste on residential solid waste is 9.7%, and the commercial charge is 17%. In addition, the county's charge tax, and in Ramsey County, there's an additional 53% charge on solid waste collection for commercial and 28% on residential. Those are very substantial taxes already. We think a better source of funding for any additional SCORE funding would be to redirect the current solid waste management tax to the environmental fund. Currently, only 70% of that goes to the environmental fund. The remainder goes to the general fund. We think that's a more appropriate way to fund any additional SCORE or other programs that you propose. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions? Thank you. Mr. Forrester.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Forrester, Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Advocates. I'd like to thank you for bringing this bill forward, particularly the language by Representative Morrison increasing the AIS surcharge on boat registrations. This will fund sort of a three-legged stool of partnerships between the Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center, Minnesota DNR, and the lake associations who are out on the lakes doing a lot of this work. You know, lakes are our identity, and I'm glad to see the state step forward with this proposal to increase the funding, which hasn't been raised since the late 1980s. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify? Anyone else in the audience would like to testify? Mr. Stromeyer, amendments are due tomorrow.
Pre-filed to my email that's posted on the site by 6 p.m. tomorrow night.
We are adjourned.